Coming to you from the megacity metropolis of Toronto, you are now entering the Cave of Solitude. How's it going, everybody? This is Eric Anthony. Welcome back to the show. This is episode 2 of season 2, or if you'd like to be more official, episode 26, but who's counting? This week, we got a special guest revisiting the Cave of Solitude, our web administrator and good friend, our wildcard.
Hello.
How's it going?
It's going pretty good.
That's good. Welcome back to the cave. This is exciting. No Daphne J this week. Sorry, listeners, but you're going to have to put up with me and our wild card. But we promise it'll be a good one. We've been saving this episode, planning it for quite some time. We haven't been able to schedule it as well as we would have liked to. But now everything has come in order and it's going down. So, our wild card, how have you been? What's new and exciting in your life since the last time you were on our technically season finale of season 1?
Really?
Yes, it's been a while since we've returned, but how have you been since then?
I've been really well, yeah. There's not a whole lot going on. We did go to a pretty amazing experience with Back to the Future in musical. That was a great time with some good friends.
Yeah, it was so good. We had a great time. And I'm happy you bring it up now because I really want to get your opinion. What did you think of... We just had that... Me and Daph J recorded an episode for Back to the Future for the 30th anniversary. Mm-hmm. I want to get your input on that experience of seeing it on a big screen. What was it like?
True. I've never seen it on a big screen.
What was it like for you?
You know what, the big screen was not as big of a thing for me as it was for the just hearing all the little nuances of the audio, looking at what they're doing to make those sounds. I didn't even realize
that's true.
That was going on.
I didn't mention, that's a good way to put it, the nuances.
Yeah. Like when you see the violinists, they're what noises that they make, sound mm-hmm. effects, I guess you can say, throughout the movie. They're going almost the whole movie. It's crazy. And then different bass and then cellists, they just do an awesome job. And the Toronto Symphony does a really good job of it.
Yeah, when you listen to scores, like anything that is instantly recognizable, you know the melody. Mm-hmm. But you don't realize, unless you really sit and listen to, like you said, the nuances of what every instrument is doing. If you take one of those things out of that score, it doesn't have that impact. I noticed that just recently I was listening to a record of John Williams. It's called John Williams Works. Mm-hmm. Something old. I bought it in a vintage record shop thinking that this is going to be, you know, the John Williams mm-hmm. compilation to have. But it wasn't the London Symphony Orchestra playing. So it didn't sound as good as what the instruments that I'm expecting to do something, the power of the horns or whatever it might be, just wasn't there. And you don't realize how much of a difference it makes. But like you said, when you watch it in the orchestra, it was incredible. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I've never seen that movie on a big screen, so many things popped out at me that I didn't notice before.
What's a couple?
It sounds stupid, but like the in Doc Brown's laboratory. I mean, you can see it if you watch it on television, but like the little, like even the Burger King wrappers in the corner, name brands of things, the lady that worked at Lou's Diner. I never really got a clear shot of what she looked like when she's an important character. But all these little things that you're like, oh, okay, now I can see that. Biff having a cut across his lip after Marty punched him out. Like, they're things that are there, but playing them the way they were meant to be seen, you just see the movie in a different scope.
Yeah.
So
that's true, yeah.
Yeah, that was fun. That was a good experience. And we mentioned on the episode that we did go with Little Sparrow mm-hmm. and our wild card. We appreciate you guys bringing us along for the ride. It was mm-hmm. fantastic.
It was a gift from my wife, and it was an awesome gift. I highly recommend it.
Any other movies you would want to see that come to your mind that have a specific score you would want to hear played live with the movie?
Well, I've mentioned it before with Edward Scissorhands, but I think it would be better still to see Star Wars like that.
Absolutely.
I think that would be the top one for me to see in that environment.
I'd have to agree. That would have to be the top one. I don't think any other movie has quite the score like that.
Mm-hmm.
Superman, the movie, had a John Williams score as well. And I didn't realize what an impact the score made until I watched the special feature DVD of Superman the movie, and they had a score track only. They took out all the dialogue and just played the movie with the music throughout it. And the way the story is told, you still understand it. I mean, obviously you need the visual, but the music itself tells a story.
Yeah.
And that was one of the first times I realized how important the right score is to a movie like that. But Star Wars, I think that takes the cake.
Yeah.
Do you think that is the most recognizable movie score of all time? Does anything top that?
Not for me. I'm trying to think back to another score that would... No, I think for me that would be the top one. I remember because I've tried playing that on piano, the main theme. I haven't tried that with any other movie themes, except for Edward Scissorhands, but it not as a full, like the, yeah, I haven't tried that before with any other movie, because that one really, I wanted to be able to play myself, so,
yeah.
Star Wars is definitely the one.
I'd have to admit, as much as I love the score for Superman, and even Danny Elfman on Batman,
mm-hmm.
I love that too, but which is the theme song for Star Wars? Is it the Empire March? Is it the
March?
The fanfare at the beginning that you hear? Like, is it the binary sunset that with Luke standing on the sand dunes? Like, there's just so many.
Yeah, no, you're right. There's quite a few theme songs, but I think the main one. That one.
As soon
definitely.
As, what do you think is gonna happen on December 18th or December 17th when everyone's going to go watch it? What do you think?
Have to throw it in there at least once.
Well, it's going to start the movie.
Yeah,
but do you
that's
think,
true, yeah.
Do you think tears will start rolling down people's faces when they hear that? Because the music has that nostalgic effect, right?
I have to say, this is an admission. When I walked into the musical production of Back to the Future, I started to get a little bit teary. But just the idea of what was happening, like just that there were so many people weren't making this thing happen. To see that, I have a feeling there'll be quite a few that will be quite excited. I don't know what tears. Someone will probably will.
I remember.
Will you?
You know what? I don't know, but those are the type of, it's as stupid as it is, like these are first world issues, right? Crying at a Star Wars release. But it's those things that bring you back to that childhood purity, you know, hearing the Superman main theme or the Star Wars main theme bring you back to like a time of just happiness and nostalgia. So when you see these things come back, I don't know, it's hard not to get that feeling of joy to the point of like being emotional about it. Like even when we watched Back to the Future, when the opening credits came across, but they played the music to go with it that had never been there before. I don't know. You got the chills, the goosebumps.
Oh, yeah.
And seeing the conductor go through it. Like, I never thought that much of that score. I said it before. I knew it was good. I liked it. But I didn't know that it had that much of an impact. It was good.
Yeah, very good.
I'm looking forward to December 18th or 17th, whenever I can sneak in the...
We have the 18th at 2:30 because that's the best time for us to find it
in the afternoon.
A seat, yeah.
I got 3:45.
That's good.
Hopefully, I get seats with the people.
I know that if I walked into a theater and I had to sit in those first front row, the first three or four seats, you know that really low section, there would be tears in my eyes if I had to do that.
That's what would make you
that
cry.
Would make me cry.
Fair enough. Fair enough. So. This episode, we're going to be discussing Image Comics, Robert Kirkman's The Walking Dead. No, I'm kidding. We're going to be discussing Robert Kirkman's creator-owned Invincible. Now, before we dig into the meat of the first 13 issues of this book, I want to just ask you a little bit about your experience with comic books. Because everybody knows that I'm kind of like the comic book geek amongst our group of friends, but you've been reading at a voracious pace, probably more than I have recently. So tell me a little bit of your experience getting into comic books lately.
Yeah, so to start way back, I think my first comic that I read is actually like the, there was like a, what do you call that? It was Star Wars. My goodness, my brain is gone.
Like a digest size?
Yeah, it was a chunk of one of the movies.
Okay.
In comic book form, but it was a book.
Okay.
And I remember we used to have long drives, and that was like the book I would go through.
But it wasn't awesome. Sized like a regular comic book.
No.
It was more like a...
It was like a little, like,
okay.
Like a novel.
Like a digest.
Like a novel.
Okay, yeah.
That I read. That was one of the first ones that I've had. And then I basically was off comics from then until maybe a year or two when you gave me a couple to look at. I read through the omnibus of Batman Court of Owls. That was
okay.
One of the first ones that I kind of just jumped right into. Okay. I like the idea of having a book that kind of reminds me of Batman Begins with the League, and then they did a kind of a similar approach with the Court of Owls.
Mm-hmm.
I really like that. This whole, like, they're kind of intertwined throughout the city for so many years, but he's just finding out now. And then after that, I read Hawkeye, which I was surprised that I would like.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was actually a really cool book. And my favorite part about that one, I forget what the book is called, was there was one comic that was specifically taken from the viewpoint of a dog.
Yeah, the pizza dog.
It was genius.
Wasn't that amazing?
Yeah. Like, whoever thought that through, and like, you see this dog acting in a certain way, but it's telling you why. He's
yeah.
doing certain things. It's awesome.
That issue actually changed the way I look at my own dog and what it could be thinking. Like, when I constantly talk to her in
yeah.
full sentences, but she's just probably picking out
right.
one or two words
right.
and just food oriented all
yeah.
the time. But yeah, no, that was a great issue. Continue. What else you can read?
So then you did tell me about Invincible, and I didn't jump on it right away. And as we were talking, you actually gave me the first three books here, and I read through it very quickly. It's very captivating. And then I did kind of go between this and Amazing Spider-Man. I've read through some of the ones you recommended on the podcast with Daredevil,
right.
Yellow, and a few other Batman-related ones. I do like Batman, too, so I've gone through a few of them to remember which ones they were now. The only one that really sticks in my mind was The Court of Owls.
That's a good one. Once you start forgetting what you've read, that's a sign that you've been reading a lot.
That's
good.
True.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So what do you find that... So you prefer Batman, it sounds like. That's kind of like you lean towards Batman. So that would make Daft J really happy.
Yeah.
And me as well. I love Batman. So what is it about that character specifically that intrigues you? Like so many other people.
Yeah, it's... I guess... A lot of the other ones that you don't really feel like you can really connect with them. Spider-Man, I mean, he's a nerd, yeah, so I can connect with that. But then other than that, not really. Whereas Batman, because he's just a guy with this tons of money, which I don't have, I feel like you can kind of relate to him a little bit more. His issues are... He's constantly just getting beat up and hurt, and he just keeps going. So it's also a tale of bravery. So another thing that's really awesome to know that a guy that just is normal, with the quotation fingers, because he's not, but at the same time, he's just a guy. Yeah.
Do you think that it's that Batman isn't... I mean, he's got the outfit, he's got the gadgets, but he's not... your typical superhero in the sense that he's got some amazing power. Like, he can't fly, or he can't swing on webs, or he can't... There isn't anything other than what he's learned how to do.
Mm-hmm.
that even if he was in civilian clothes, this guy could still be who he is. Is that part of what makes him, do you think, appealing? And yeah. That it's always nighttime, that mystery about this guy?
Yeah, him as Bruce Wayne, I mean, it's interesting to see him, especially in the Batman movies, to see how he interacts as Bruce Wayne, but really nobody really cares about his life as Bruce Wayne. So yeah, for sure, nighttime is when you can see him in his best light, I'd say. That's but if I saw him in a novel where he wasn't playing Batman, where he was actually having to stay as Bruce Wayne for a while, I would definitely read that just to kind of see what they would think what they would come up with. I mean,
there's actually an interesting storyline I would recommend to you. It's called Bruce Wayne, or Batman is the book, Bruce Wayne Murderer,
mm-hmm.
where he's framed for murder of somebody close to him, mm-hmm. but throughout the majority of that book, he's in prison as Bruce Wayne.
Mm.
And it's all of his quote-unquote family members who are trying to figure out if he actually did it, what the motives would be, who would be the one to do this to him. So for a good portion of this book, you're just dealing with Bruce Wayne in prison. There's no Batman.
Right.
But him having to use that Batman aesthetic to get himself through prison and dealing with stuff. So you might like that one. That one's really good. And then it goes on to him, Batman Fugitive, where he gets out of prison and he kind of gets rid of the Bruce Wayne, what's the word I'm looking for? Identity. Because he figures that person is my fake person.
Right.
People, Bruce Wayne is gone. I'm just Batman all the time now. So it's an interesting take. It's I haven't finished the second half of it, but it is a cool concept, because then the family members of his are now being like, how can you completely take away the human side? What makes you human?
Mm-hmm.
You're going to turn into some type of a monster. So,
but you haven't got to that part yet.
I've gotten to that point where they've confronted him, but not to the next book. I've been putting it off.
So when it says that his family, like, who?
Like Nightwing and the Robins and Alfred and all of them are the ones who are trying to rein him in.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a cool concept.
The one book that... It was on the darker side. It was the... it was a tale of a henchman of Joker. It was a storyline from his side of view.
Huh.
I found that one quite interesting. I couldn't tell you what it's called now.
That sounds good.
But it was interesting to see how he was trying to make the Joker approve of him.
Okay.
But you're seeing Batman from the other side. Him just showing up and just ruining all their plans.
Okay.
So I found that book to be quite kind of cool too. I like the other angles. So
I find that that's something that you can do with Batman, is you can tell a story where he's not really in it. He's just kind of got a presence.
Mm-hmm.
And you focus in on the ancillary characters. And then you can do a book of just him.
Right.
You can't top him. Mm-hmm. There's just not many characters like that.
It's true.
So do you prefer Marvel to DC or DC to Marvel? Is there any preference do you find?
I couldn't come up with a preference. Just because, I mean, I didn't really understand a lot about the art and who was involved in making it until recently. So I wouldn't even be able to tell between what's what, because the artists, you've said before, some of them have changed sides, doing things for DC or Marvel. Really, if the story's good,
that's all that matters to you. Fair enough. I think that's the way it should be. If the story's good, everything else shouldn't matter who the character is. And how do you find now the reading a graphic novel or a comic book as opposed to other mediums of reading either a book or watching a serialized television show? How do you compare in your enjoyment level of those things? What are comic books?
I find comics are more relaxing. I find the other mediums, like, reading and then reading comic books, I would say are, you read at your pace. If you want to go back and look at something, you can. I find when you're watching a movie, if you miss something, you'll have no idea and someone will have to tell you about it, or you have to watch the whole thing again.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're just like, oh, did I hear something or did I read something about that? You can just flip back a page, look at it. Yeah. No, I prefer, if I'm going to just sit and I want to relax, I want to watch a movie. It'd be better to read something.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm just feeling bored, then watching a movie works really well.
When you need the mind to just kind of not be too focused.
Exactly.
Yeah. I find it's that good medium between reading a book, watching a movie. The comic book kind of does a little bit of both for you, where you have to be attentive to details, use a little bit of your imagination to find a pace of how quick you want things to go, but the picture is there.
Mm-hmm.
And I find you're enjoying kind of artwork as well as literary work in one shot. So that's kind of why I lean towards the comic book, but at times I'm starting to get a little bit fatigued with the guys in spandex after a while. Sometimes you just want to get a good story with stuff, but I don't know, I always find myself going back to the well. I can't help it. I thought you would find this interesting. The guy who is the, I don't know what his official title is, but I think he's considered the publisher right now at DC, or co-publisher, Dan DiDio. You heard this name before?
No.
He was the producer of Reboot.
Really?
Yes.
That's cool.
I thought you would like that.
That is an awesome TV show.
And that's your favorite, right?
Well, it brings back a lot of good memories as a kid. So, yeah, no, it was a really awesome show.
That's his claim to, one of his claims to fame was Reboot.
Really?
And I was like, wow, what are the chances that the guy at heading DC Comics would have been one of the architects behind that show?
I hope. See, the sad thing is that they wanted to continue the show, and there's this huge following of people that were trying to get it to happen. I mean, I don't know who they were, but there was a lot of people involved in it, but then it just died off, never got continued. They made a comic book of it, though. A Reboot comic. It was like, when I was following it, there was only one at the time.
Okay.
So,
it was a Canadian creative show?
Yeah, it was made in BC.
Huh. Yeah. Interesting.
And it was the first 3D animated television show.
It'll come back. I think it'll come back.
It has to. It's so good.
I think there's enough of, like, it was a creative idea.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's enough of a cult following. They bring back everything. Eventually
they're
going
to. They said
they
were going to bring back a movie, but it was produced by fans, or not by a large company. It would be produced by
fan-made.
A small. I don't know. We'll see what happens. I have to do more research on that one.
Do you think that could ever be? No, I don't know if that could ever be a live action movie, but it could be an animated film.
Yeah, it would have to be. It'd be very strange. It'd be like Tron.
Yeah.
Which we've already done that, so it would be better 3D animated.
Yeah, that's true. Okay. Moving on to the main subject at hand, Invincible from Image Comics, created by Robert Kirkman and Corey Walker, who was the artist on the first 7 issues, and later on Ryan Ottley would take over drawing duties, and he's been on the book since then. It's been over 100 issues he's been on this title, which is pretty incredible, and I think the artwork has gotten better and better with each issue that's gone on. So what are your thoughts on this book, this character? Give me your... Do you think we should give a synopsis of Invincible to start before we continue? How would you summarize this character?
He's the kid of a superhero who knows that at some point he will probably get powers, but he's not 100% sure. And it's his journey into becoming a superhero and then having tragedy at the same time, which I think is pretty standard for all superhero novels. But this one does have an interesting twist on that.
Mm-hmm. With the things that you've read thus far, you haven't read through the entire lexicon of Marvel Comics or DC, but where would you place this run or this character for yourself?
I would say it's better than the Hawkeye one that I read. It's not as I don't find it like he's doing anything revolutionary like that one comic strip where he was in the view of a dog. But the storyline has me captivated, and you're seeing different people, and the cast is huge. That you start to understand them. I really like that, where they teach you about a character, and then you start to be able to think, okay, this person's going to do that. So I feel that part has made it, so it's better than that book that I would say. But then I still liked The Court of Owls better.
Okay.
So that would be one of my favorites at this point.
That's your favorite storyline. Yeah. And granted, the Court of Owls was a 12-issue story that has somewhat of a finite, like, beginning and end.
Yeah.
This storyline has been, how many issues is it at now? 126? They've been going. Now, of course, they have story arcs, just like every other comic book, right? It has its own quote-unquote Court of Owls type of events and things like that. But for myself personally, I've read probably more comics than I should have in my life. I can't think of another run or a line of comic books that I could place above this one on a big picture grand scale. The consistency of how good it's been from beginning to end. When I first started collecting them, I wanted to branch away from the DC and Marvel and try to go for that creator-owned, because I kept hearing creator-owned. So Invincible was the one Image line that I looked at the back of it and it was teen-rated.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't something that I had to worry about what I was going to find in there. So that's why I picked it. And I kept having, when I would go into other shops and I'd be looking at other Invincible books, people would be like, that's probably the best superhero comic that you can pick up off the shelf. And that was a big statement with everything else superhero that's been out there. So I kept giving it another shot, and I'm happy I did. Now,
me too.
Initially, the first book, what were your thoughts on volume one, the first four issues of this story?
There's a few sequences in it that made me realize that I'm reading something that's probably not, you wouldn't find in other comics. There's a certain dryness of the mother's character. She's like, oh, you have your powers. Oh, that's great. Like, it's very just
nonchalant.
Weird. It's like a weird family that you're seeing. One of the first, I think, four pages, he's sitting on the can reading a comic book. It's very, very strange. But then you're getting, so it gets right into it. It doesn't take very long to get into his powers, him learning about how to use them, and then it just kind of takes off from there. So I kind of like that. You're not seeing a whole lot of what happened before. They do some flashbacks.
Yeah.
But the way that they work you right into the character, seeing how he reacts with his world, is awesome. Especially his family life. That is the funnier side of things, is his family life.
Yeah, it keeps certain things grounded. As ridiculous as it is to have a Superman-esque father, and now you're just getting powers, and you're so... He doesn't freak out about it. He's kind of expecting it to happen because he knows who his father is.
Mm-hmm.
So when it does happen, it, like you said, it's so nonchalant at dinner time, and then he just says, you know what, I'm gonna give flying a shot. Let me see if I could do this. But the first books, I think, work well if you look at it as a television show. And funny enough, Robert Kirkman titled all of his all the trades after television shows. So the first one's called Family Matters, and I didn't realize it till now. But the principal of Mark Grayson School, who is Invincible, the main character Mark Grayson, looks a lot like the father from Family Matters, Carl Winslow, whose real name is Reginald Vell Johnson, who is the name of Mark Grayson's high school, which I didn't realize until reading it a third time. And that's the cool thing too about this book, is there's a lot of Easter eggs in it. If you're paying attention to the panels, there's little things there that you'll catch and are little gags.
Yeah.
Did you catch any that stood out to you?
Well, it's funny that you say that. I did before. Now my brain has gone blank. There was the one... Oh, where'd it go now? Charlie Brown.
Charlie Brown pops up a couple times.
Yeah. So you see this kid, this bald kid, which is a lot like me, walking around with this yellow sweater with this weird black zigzag pattern. You're like, what? Nobody wears clothes like that. Except for Charlie Brown.
And he's there. He's there a couple times.
Yeah. I don't know what that... Maybe he likes Charlie Brown. I'm not sure.
Did you catch... what's his name? From Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. It's Bill. He's in the high school with them. And you don't see his face, but it's just a guy dressed like him with the baseball cap, Wild Stallions. Mm-hmm. I thought that was pretty funny, too.
I see that one now. Yeah.
Yeah, that was good. Nothing else is coming to mind. Oh, Twin Pines Mall.
Right.
There's a scene that takes place at Twin Pines Mall with him and his father, which is, of course, a reference to Back to the Future, which we've been talking about ad nauseum lately.
Mm.
But the first couple issues play like a pilot of a television show. Usually the pilot of a show gets right into it. It doesn't take too long to set the table for you to realize what you're dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
So right away, this is the guy's dad. He's got superpowers. By the end of the issue, he's a hero.
Yeah.
Doesn't take four issues to get into that. Did you find it moved a little bit too quickly?
No, for me it was good.
It was okay.
I liked that. I mean, say they did go back and give you a bit more storyline. They could have. But if nobody really was interested in that, and you really want to see what's going to happen with him as a superhero, that's what's going to keep people reading it. Maybe later on they can take you back a bit to kind of give you a glimpse of what his life was like before, but not in the initial one. You kind of want to get right into it.
Yeah, he really doesn't waste any time. At first when I'm reading, I'm like, wow, this is going pretty quick. Like, there's no origin story. There's
mm-hmm.
In the second issue, his second or third issue, the father tells the son his origin, quote-unquote, his origin story to explain to him where his father is from.
Right.
Did you think it was too much of a riff on Superman? A little bit?
That's a good question.
Omni-Man?
You know what? They do that throughout.
They take
all kinds of characters. I think it's just a fun little gag on it, but the fact that there's one part where it says the guy that makes their suits for all these solar panels and he makes the joke, he said something like, you know, we put all these panels on because we thought that your powers are based on the sun, which we were wrong about.
Right.
So yeah, no, that kind of stuff is just funny.
Yeah.
Because has nothing to do with his powers, but it was fun to kind of make fun of Superman a little bit there.
And they do a little spoof on the Justice League too as you read on, which I thought was hilarious, but at first reading, I thought like, oh brother, do I really have to deal with a fake Justice League because he can't really play with the DC characters that he would wishes he could, but it wasn't anything like that, which I was really happy to see as I read on. And the thing that I like about it too, as much as the first couple of issues seem like it's moving quickly in setting up the characters, all of those things have payoffs later on.
Mm-hmm.
Like, in issue 5, there's two things that have been set up, and then the payoff right after. When Mark first realizes he has superpowers, he's tossing out garbage at work, and he launches it just to toss it into the big trash can in the back, but he throws it off into orbit. And I don't know, reading that, I was like, oh, there it is. There's a superpower scene.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't think anything else of the garbage.
Mm-hmm.
5 issues later, this nondescript bag of garbage just falls into the middle of London. It's been orbiting the Earth for 5 months.
Yeah.
So nothing that, as you read this book, and I'm at, I think, issue 100, you're... Where
116.
Are you now? 116. So we've read a good chunk of this beast. Everything... Nothing is there that isn't touched on again.
Mm-hmm. You kind of have to read it twice.
You do.
I found that there was a scene where he's flying with his dad, and they're going to do their first time flying together or teaming up.
Teaming up, yeah.
And so they're flying through the air, and his dad just trails off.
Yeah.
And he comes right back and he's like, what? So then the father explains, oh, I just cleaned up this chemical explosion at the university. He's going in like three books later, so I think it's on maybe issue 10 or 11, I can't remember exactly. He's going to go to this university to check it out, and the lady showing him around says, you know, I'd like to take you to the lab, but we just recently had a chemical fire, so we have this, so you can't take you. So they I don't know if they're planning this stuff in advance, or if it's just like, oh, hey, let's just throw this in there, because we already said it. I'm not sure. I feel like they've planned it all.
It kind of feels like that, because every time I read it, things happen that I kind of dismiss, and I don't think, oh, okay, that was a cool little side thing that happened. You got to fill in a couple pages to get this story moving. And then, like you said, later on, some of it becomes huge parts of the story, which I feel investing in it is worth your while. Like, nothing that you've read becomes, like, a throwaway. Robert Kirkman, I don't know if that's part of the... I don't know if that's part of the advantage of doing a creator-owned book, is that no one will tell you, no, don't go back to this. He's got that creative freedom to be like, you know what? Remember that Coke can that he drank in this issue? I'm gonna make something out of it.
It's true.
Do you find when you read Invincible, because it is a creator-owned book, and there's that freedom for him to... No character is safe. That's what they always say about... You know, like The Walking Dead or other books from Image. You keep reading it because your main character could essentially die.
Mm-hmm.
There isn't like a... It's not like Superman where, you know, if they kill him, he's got to be back because they're releasing a movie about him. In this case, in the book, a lot of main characters disappear that you don't expect. Do you find that to be a better thing to have as an option as opposed to when you're reading Batman where you know like, yeah, he's going to come back? He's not really dead.
Right. So yeah, I think it's better that way when you're not sure. Anything can happen, so you're in more suspense.
Yeah.
Like, he could be gone for a crazy amount of time, he could be dead. Chances are he won't be, because the book is called Invincible. But then again, not to spoil too much, but someone else takes his place for a while. So yeah, it's very true. He could just disappear at some point and someone else take his place.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on the artwork, though?
Yeah, so I was kind of laughing a little bit about the first, I think probably first five, and it's done by the first...
Corey Walker.
Yeah, so yeah. He does these little squiggles on everyone's fingers to show knuckles and things.
He even does it on the elbows.
It's so weird. When you watch, it looks like they have little pigtails and everything.
Yeah.
So it's... He does have a certain pattern to what he does, and I think it does work for him. And even, like, I'm just looking at it now with you, the eyes, when... I don't think they continue that. He does these, like, little dot eyes every once in a while.
It seems inconsistent, because you look here, and it shows that he's got the full eyes there, and in this one, it's just the circles.
Yeah.
And I when I first read it, this book, I liked the dialogue and the concept of the story, but the art was throwing me off. Mm-hmm. I felt like it was little shapes at times. Like, this is the shape of an arm, here's a box for a head. As simplistic as you can make these characters be with the shape of their body, do it. Mm-hmm. It was almost like a cut and paste on a computer program.
Yeah.
Did you find that, or is it just me?
Well, for sure. When I'm looking at, like, I was looking at the trade cover, and it doesn't look all that interesting. So if someone was to look at the art and be like, oh, I gotta get this, they wouldn't think that. But even the first cover, he looks kind of strange. He doesn't look all that strong. He looks like he's just been thrown against a wall. And he's got a little bit of a Tobey Maguire kind of a look to him?
Sure, yeah.
Like when he gets really, anyway, I just don't see it. I didn't like the initial drawings. There are some moments that I like. Like, the next page is actually really cool. Where he's flying through the air carrying this guy that's about to explode. they really do kind of take you right into the story like that with the art. So at least you might get a few pages that you don't like, but there are quite a few that are good.
These are one of those books that helped me to appreciate art style and to see more than just, oh, I like that the pictures are pretty. Mm. It helped me to see that there's a pacing that's involved, where the characters are positioned in relation to each other and what's happening in the book. Can you follow what the story needs you to understand and follow? Mm-hmm. And I found that this art did lend itself to that, but there were things, like when I look at like his hand here, and it's just like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I just didn't feel like, after reading something like Greg Capullo, like you said, off of Court of Owls, mm-hmm. to reading this, it is a pretty jarring difference. But when Ryan Ottley comes on, I find that he, for a while, continues kind of following the pattern that Cory Walker set. But as this series continues, you get into higher issues, the art is fantastic. Mm-hmm. Like the detail just in how he balls up a fist. Right. It's great. I'm so happy that I stuck with it. There was a time when they were publishing this book, Robert Kirkman tells a story that he had a very long plan of a story arc in regards to Omni-Man, who's Invincible's father. Mm-hmm. His story is that he's from someone of a planet like Krypton, but imagine if Krypton didn't explode, mm-hmm. what the people would be like, right. and how they would view the other planets around them. And what their responsibility or their... Will responsibility be the right word? Or their ambitions would be towards those other planets would be. So that's what this guy... This is where he comes from without giving too much away. Mm. So he had this big story arc planned for him. But they had to push it up in schedule. Because in the first couple of issues, there's nothing really major that happens in this story. Mm-hmm. Would you agree? There's nothing like, oh my goodness.
It's true. It's now reading it through again, you kind of get like, oh, I want to tell you something, but he doesn't get a chance to, something gets in the way. But other than that, no, it's just him in high school.
Yeah.
And then figuring out his powers, and he sees someone stealing something, so he stops them. Yeah. It's very simple.
And I reading back on it, I like it because it kind of is like old-time comics where they're one-and-done issues. Mm-hmm. Where here's the story, these are the characters you've gotten to know, here's the adventure for this week. But there's little threads of like, oh yeah, you remember this is still happening. Mm-hmm. We got to figure that out. We'll get back to that. And then you'll have a big conclusion for it. Kind of like a television show, there's always like those 4-episode kind of arcs. Mm-hmm. That's what I found this was like, but nothing major was happening at the end of an issue to leave you on a cliffhanger. So he had to push up what he had planned for issue 25, which takes place now in issue 8. Mm-hmm. Should we spoil it, or should we let the reader or the person listening, the listeners, find out for themselves?
I don't know. It is a very good arc.
Yeah. I can't think of a bigger shocker.
No.
That I've ever read.
Yeah, that's very true.
Would you agree?
I would.
This one completely throws you and changes the entire course of the story. From that point on, the book is off to the races. Mm-hmm. Would you agree?
Oh, yeah. Like, there's, without saying what happens, the main characters, which you think are going to be, like, the mainstays, 5 of them just are gone.
Gone.
And one of them might come back. I'm not going to spoil anything. But it's just... It's crazy just to toss that out at you right away. It kind of drags you in. Now you don't know what's going to happen anymore. And then what I found after is that all of the people that he's interacting with have different powers from the DC and Marvel universe. They're not copies anymore. Some of them maybe.
It seemed like
it. But it seemed like he was... Like there's his girlfriend, sometimes not girlfriend, as comics go, has a power that's very unique. It's cool how it works. And as you're watching her story, they actually go through every character later and how they got their powers. I found her story to be kind of cool. And how her powers work. I think her powers are way more interesting than Invincible's are. He's just born with them.
That's true.
And it's just like he can just do cool things. Whereas she, it's based on herself. Which, and like, so when she uses them, it affects her in a certain way. So it's kind of cool.
I don't think I've gotten to that point yet.
It's very cool.
So you're speaking of Adam Eve.
Yeah. So like I found that even though there's like this huge change in the story, you're finding now that there's all these characters that are very different from the DC and Marvel world.
And he really does build a universe.
Yeah.
As this goes on. That you could, and there's other comic books published associated with the Invincible universe, which is really cool, but you don't have to read them. And I kind of appreciate that, because I find when I read the Marvel DC storylines, it's almost like you're forced into buying something that you don't really want, but to complete your arc or to know what's happening in the story, they force these things down your throat. Whereas with the Invincible, it's all, if you want to have some more fun with these characters, you could read this.
Right.
So it almost makes it a little more appealing, but not a chore to read it.
Yeah, I've actually wanted to look up a few of them. I haven't read through them yet. But there's one, and I won't tell you which one, but one of them, one of the side arcs, they're all dead. So you could read that whole arc, and it could mean absolutely nothing now. But it is kind of cool that he did that. He made this whole storyline, made a separate arc where you could read that whole story, but at some point, that whole team's gone.
Okay.
So that to me is intense. I kind of like that kind of a style where they made this arc. You can read it from start to finish now as a team.
Do you like his power set, Invincible's power set? It's pretty generic.
Yeah, it is very generic. He's a good lead character because of his story mainly, but as for his powers, he does have a weakness. It's not kryptonite. It's something worse. And I won't ruin that for you either if you haven't seen what it is.
Oh, they say it.
It's actually really stupid. But, you know, I guess in that instance, he has to have some weakness. But to find out what it is kind of silly.
But, you know, like, as I'm reading this, I'm like, I was always turned off from the idea of reading this book because it just seemed like a Image Comics version of a Superman in a teenager's body / Spider-Man type of story, which in essence it kind of is, but people have such a hard time writing Superman. And this one, it seems like, and Robert Kirkman has said it himself, he has so much fun writing this story. But his power set is super speed, flight, strength, and naturally he can take a beating, which is sometimes fun to see.
Yeah.
But there isn't that. Do you think it's the fact that he doesn't have the super hearing and the x-ray vision and the heat vision that makes it more writable?
Oh, yeah, for sure. And especially because he's not the only Viltrumite, is what he's called.
Yeah.
So there's a whole different story arc where he's no longer invincible, right? He's with another person that's equally as strong, if not stronger. And then he has to work with a team. So I think that kind of makes the story a little bit cooler too, where there's not just, he's just not the strongest being out there. He's just a normal guy amongst them. Yeah. I like that feature.
No, I was reading this the second time. Now you bring up the virtual might, the power set of them fighting each other. In this story where, in the first 13 issues, in about issue 11 or 12, it's a really big climactic point. Climatic point, right? I said it right this time? Climactic?
That's the one.
That's the one. Where he has to fight a person with his power set, if not more powerful than him. And I kind of felt like I was, and you see the destruction taking place everywhere these two go. I kind of felt it was Man of Steel like.
Oh yeah, it's true.
Did you notice that?
You know what, I didn't think about it, but you're right. There's buildings crumbling. Everywhere they go.
The action in this movie or in this comic, it really, they hold no punches, for no pun intended, but things get destroyed. Yeah. Cities get completely taken off the map, literally.
Yeah, no, it's true. as the book goes on, it even gets even larger than that. Yeah.
Do you think that's just comic book, like, yeah, city gets destroyed, oh look, it gets rebuilt, but I don't find that happens in this book.
No.
Once that city gets infected, it carries on.
Mm-hmm.
Do you like the amount of, for lack of a better term, destruction and violence, or could you do without it?
Some of the beings that they're fighting against, I can't imagine. Some of them are Godzilla-like.
Yeah.
So no matter what you do, there's going to be destruction. The one where they just completely, I think they flooded a whole city, so it's completely gone. That was a little bit much, but it was to show the intensity of the kind of choices that they make as superheroes and what can happen. Because he eventually joins up with someone that completely makes a mess of things. So superheroes can make mistakes too.
Yeah, no, it's true. And he's constantly figuring things out. I like that. It's kind of like that Spider-Man, that Spider-Man worldview where it's a kid learning his powers. But I don't find that he's as much down on his luck.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you read Spider-Man, you're like, oh my goodness, this guy can't catch a break. In Invincible's case, things can get pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
And then take a real turn, but get back to good. I like that.
Yeah.
That feeling of it, right? It's not all doom and gloom all the time. And when there's doom and gloom, I think you feel it a little bit more because of how good it could be.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So this series, these 13 issues, the first 13-issue arc,
mm-hmm.
movie, television show, episodic, or on the movie screen?
I don't think they could do it on the movie screen. It would be too hard. They could do that one main thing with that one person that he has to fight that we're not saying. They could do that as a movie. But because of the resolution doesn't take place right away, it would be really tough. You'd want to see that over a period of time. You wouldn't want to see it all at once.
Yeah.
Because it wouldn't make any sense at all.
As I was reading this for the third time now, these first three books, I'm like, this would make a great movie. But then I was also thinking of how he named them all after a television show, and how these first books are like pilots to it. This would make fantastic television series. I would be glued. It would easily top anything that they're doing on TV. And some of the stuff they have is good, but this would be the benchmark, I think. Who would you cast as the character?
So I actually didn't think about who I would cast. I was thinking about the voices in my head.
Oh, the voices in your head.
That's what I was thinking when I was talking about that earlier. It's funny, when I hear a voice now, when I read the book, I hear Jerry O'Connell.
Okay,
in my mind.
Yeah. No, that's
but
a good
as
voice.
For casting, I don't know. I don't know who I would pick. I'm not so good with actors' names. There's a few that I've stuck with over time, but
okay.
Yeah. So what about you?
The voice I hear in my head, for Invincible, man. I kind of see and hear in my head, because I did a little bit of both. I kind of cast the characters.
Yeah.
When I see Omni-Man, I hear and see Tom Selleck, that mustache.
Yeah, no, that'd be cool.
I almost feel that he is tailor-made to be Omni-Man.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Oh, yeah. No, that'd be awesome.
Even the stature.
Sure.
So I see him hear his voice, see him. And for Invincible, I see, you know, Mark Paul Gosselaar? Does that ring a bell?
No.
Zach Morris. Saved by the Bell?
Oh, yeah.
He's not really blonde.
Oh, really?
No, he's a brown hair, dark hair kid. They dyed his hair blonde.
Mm.
I feel like he would be Invincible.
That would work out really well. Yeah, no, that's good.
Yeah?
Yeah.
That would work. And then for Adam Eve, I don't know what the age is, but I see Bryce Dallas Howard.
I don't know who that is.
Jurassic World, running around in her heels.
Oh. I'd have to see. Okay. Picturing it now. So, yeah, she'd be in her late 20s or 30s. Yeah, because I can see that it wouldn't work out at this point, but maybe later on.
If you give her long red hair, because I think mm-hmm. she's naturally redheaded. Give her long red hair.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she was in Lady in the Water.
I didn't see that one.
You didn't see that one?
No.
She's got the long red hair in there. So I was thinking of her height, body type, kind of fit that description. Mm-hmm. Although Adam Eve's body type does change later on. Just did they explain that, how that happened?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I got to figure that out. How about Cecil?
Yeah.
You want to explain who Cecil is? We're just throwing names out there.
That's true. So Cecil, early on, becomes his nemesis, but not at the same time. Like, he's the government agency underneath Langley. Is that where it is? It's under
something like that. Yeah,
where he takes care of all of the space and anything that can attack the Earth as a whole.
He's kind of like Nick Fury.
Yeah.
For this universe. I guess that's right. The best way to understand it.
That's true.
Yeah?
That's good, except for he's not in any way skilled at anything other than managing people. And there is a story arc with him as to why he turned out to be the way he was, which is kind of cool, because he's not just a good protector. He's got an evil side to him, too.
Yeah.
You don't really see that right away. You kind of see little nuances of his becoming... Yeah.
Yeah.
He'll do whatever it takes to get things done in the way he feels is the best way. So, good and bad character.
Who would you see playing that role? Who do you think could fit?
I struggle with the names and the faces.
Okay, well, what was the person in? Can you think of someone? Or is it not humming to you? Whose voice do you hear?
I haven't got one yet for him.
No?
No.
I thought of Ted Danson.
Ted Danson with a lot of scars.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just thinking, I mean, he's not bald like Cecil is with the...
You know what? Now that you said that, I can see the guy from... It was that book or the movie about... Harry Henderson?
Oh, John Lithgow.
John Lithgow.
Yeah.
I could see him being that character.
Yeah.
That's
the really
hair,
good.
The
yes.
hair, the face. He would be good at that.
Yeah, that would be good. Even now that you mention it, and this might be too much of a obvious pick because of the white hair, what about Christopher Lloyd?
It'd be fun.
Not playing Doc,
no,
but
no,
he's
true.
The way he, have you seen him recently? Like at age 70 something?
I haven't.
I
remember him in Dennis the Menace.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
was a super weird character.
Yeah, very
and
creepy.
And then that one. Yeah.
But I think he could probably pull that off at this age now for Cecil.
Mm-hmm.
And how about Alan the Alien? Talk about Alan the Alien.
It's
that's your favorite character.
He is one of my favorites. Yeah, I just like his. He's just a guy doing his job. Shows up on a random like every 3 years. He just comes to attack the Earth. Nobody knows why.
He's part of a coalition of. Was the coalition of planets?
Yeah,
that protect different sectors of the universe. So imagine, if you will, kind of like a Green Lantern Corps
mm-hmm.
member who goes and makes sure that each planet is being protected.
Yeah.
But he's introduced kind of like a. Well, how would you say? What would you say? How he's introduced?
He's introduced as a villain.
Yeah.
Immediately, and then they're all like, there was a bit of a joke between them when they're fighting the first time. But they finally get to the point where they're talking to each other, and he's like, okay, you deserve at least like a... I think you get one break or something like that in this battle. So they sit down and chat, and they figure out that he's actually going to the wrong planet. It's supposed to be Uarth instead of Earth. So, I mean, the comedy behind that is pretty good. But then to see his character, like, he's definitely a side arc. He's not throughout it. But he keeps coming back, and his character, you see how he struggles with... trying to take care of the universe because he does get a major role later, and also how he still has this family, and he still just seems like a normal guy but got put into a weird position, and he does hang out with the Star Trek team.
That's right.
Which is a little cameo appearance, and he makes fun of Star Trek a little bit, quite a bit.
That was the thing initially in these first 13 issues where I felt like there was a lot of pop culture references. They're just always being thrown around. And I was like, okay, is this book, am I supposed to take it seriously? Or are they just going to make fun of stuff? But I'm so happy that it didn't get canceled. Because the scope of this story, like, who would you recommend this to if you had to think about it? Who would this appeal to?
I don't know. I don't, like an adult, I would say more than a kid. Like, the cameo stuff is all from before I was born and then till now. So, I mean, the Star Trek reference, I don't think everyone would get, especially teens
right
now.
That's
they
true.
Wouldn't get it.
That's true.
Or even, like you said, Bill and Ted's. Like, I saw that in the theaters as a little kid. So, people my age definitely would really understand what's going on more.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, too, with the scope of it, like, they go to space.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of story being told throughout the universe, which I feel would appeal to the sci-fi, Star Wars, Star Trek people.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's a lot of stuff that takes place on Earth that would appeal to just, like, your average person to watch the Avengers. But even, like, the familial things that take place. Like, it really has so many attractive storytelling tropes. Is that the right word? Tropes? That the audience, like, for a television show, would be amazing.
Okay.
I think it would, so many people would like this.
Mm-hmm.
But the references, definitely what you said. I think you have to be a little bit older
to get some of
it. But I think that's with everything, though, right? Like, when you watch a lot of the cartoons today or animated films for kids, there's a lot of jokes that they slide in there to make the adults appreciate.
Yeah.
But Alan the Alien, I see Dwayne Johnson. The Rock. Wouldn't he be
Why not? Just a big
piece of muscle.
Right. Well, he'd have to, they'd have to attach something to his head, so he'd look rather ridiculous, but still.
I think
he could pull it off.
It.
He could definitely do it. But they'd have to find some way to make him look strong and then look about 10 times stronger.
And I hear his voice, too.
Yeah? When you see it.
Why not?
It's
just this big piece of muscle in space with one eye.
But most of the time, he's not even speaking. It's all happening
in
a thought bubble.
It's all in
the stomach. Yeah. So.
That's true.
Yeah. No, I like that one. That's a good pick for that character. Sometimes the book reminds me of Dragon Ball Z.
Okay.
Like, there's everyone's strong, and then something happens, and then they're this, like, 10 times stronger. And then this happens, and now they're even stronger than before, and then they battle, and people are just getting hit constantly and smashed around. So there's, like, a, I don't know, I find a little bit of a comparison to Dragon Ball Z in there.
Where everything becomes so larger than life.
Mm-hmm.
Some of those battles that they have, the things you see happen to them, it's almost to the point where it's, I don't know, too humorous to be gratuitous?
Mm.
Is that, do you get what I mean? Does that make sense? It's like so ridiculous that even though the guy gets punched so badly, that it's just like, oh my goodness, that's just ridiculous. You almost have to laugh at it.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're able to recover.
Oh yeah, the recoveries they make.
But the thing I like is that the recoveries they make, they're never done cheaply.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be earned.
Yeah, like it takes them 7 months at one point to heal. Or even longer.
Yeah.
Something like that, but yeah.
No, it's a fun ride. For anybody who hasn't picked up Invincible yet, I think it's pretty clear we both strongly recommend it. The first couple issues, it's like any television show you watch. Remember, if you've watched Arrow, you had to get through a couple of those episodes that kind of made you feel like, okay, what's really going on? Is this worthwhile? This is definitely worthwhile. Any final thoughts, our wild card on Invincible, you can think of?
No, I think that's good for me.
You think
without spoiling anything?
It's hard not to spoil. Yeah. It's so hard. But we did you a favor by not spoiling it. So definitely go out and pick this up and stick with it. If there's one comic that you can afford to buy, I think this should be the one.
Yeah.
You get your money's worth for it and your entertainment value for it. Awesome. Well, thanks, our wild card, for joining us this week. I'm happy we got to talk about Invincible. I've been chomping at the bit because I love this book. And it's been fun reading it at the same time as you and being able to get your reaction over stuff. It's been great. All right, guys, that'll be it for episode 26. Thanks for tuning in. If you've got your thoughts on Invincible or any other comics you want to recommend to us to read, you can email us at caveofsolitude@outlook.com or visit us at our website, caveofsolitude.com. And if you're looking for a place to buy the Invincible trades, go visit Cyber City Comics in North York. It's a great comic book store, great owner, and he's got all of them on the shelf. I've checked recently, they're all there. So thanks for listening, guys, and we will talk to you later.